Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP. On the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, and podcasts of prior shows are also available there under public affairs. Today is January 19th, 2022. The markets were down today, with the Dow closing at 35,028, the NASDAQ at 14,340, and the S&P at 4,532. Our topic tonight is a discussion about the CEMA designation and behavioral finance theory and how it can help us. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Eric is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Eric. He'll write it down and bring it into the studio. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. I have a guest this evening. I'm very excited to welcome Ryan Mulhern, CEMA, into the studio this evening to join me. Ryan graduated from Washington College in Maryland and joined Valley National in 2017 with several years of industry experience in retirement planning, portfolio administration, and client service. As a certified investment management analyst and licensed insurance agent, he helps clients with comprehensive financial planning, investment management, risk management, and tax planning. He's a native of the Lehigh Valley and lives here with his wife. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Lori. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you. And you know, we haven't talked about this designation in the past. Regular listeners hear my designations always at the top of the show, and quite often we'll have attorneys on and things like that. But the CEMA designation, I think, is one that's really important to understand, and the comprehensiveness of it. So I thought it would be fun to talk to you tonight about it. Is there anything else before we start that you'd like to share with the audience about you grew up in the Lehigh Valley and your family's here, big family?
Yeah, so I'm a native of Nazareth Area High School, grew up in the area. Moved back recently, purchased my house a couple years ago. I have a couple dogs, a baby on the way. So looking forward to starting my family and kind of getting rooted again in this area with my own path.
But you're from a big family yourself. You're one of how many kids?
So I'm one of seven. Yes. I'm number two in that order. So there was never a dull moment in my family.
I like to bring that up because I feel kindred spirit with Ryan because I'm one of six. So it's always nice to have that big family influence on our take on financial planning, because we have a lot of experience with a lot of different people and working with a lot of different people. So I think that's always fun. So as I mentioned, we will talk about the CEMA designation a bit and then get into some of the behavioral finance theory, which I think is also understanding is part of the CEMA curriculum. And I believe that can really help listeners understand what might be motivating or driving some of our investment decisions. I think it's, if you know, we're aware of it, I think that really can add a lot of value. So first, though, Ryan, let's talk about the CEMA designation, because I don't think as many people, you know, are aware of it. So can you kind of tell us what's involved with that?
Sure. So the CEMA stands for Certified Investment Management Analyst, and it's offered through the Investments and Wealth Institute, formerly known as IMCA. And to join this, you know, to get this certification, it requires a professional responsibility to the client and following a code of professional responsibility to your peers as well. So there's certainly standards that you must withhold, you know, when you act as a SEMA certificate. Mm-hmm. In the financial services industry, you know, as with any industry in today's age, you have a responsibility not only to yourself, but to your peers, and even more so to your clients, to continuously educate yourself to better perform at your job and take care of the clients you work with. The SEMA has four requirements. They call them the four E's. And I only know that because I recently looked them up. It was not there when I first started. But the first one is experience. So applicants need 3 years of relevant experience in a qualified financial services job. Number two is ethics. So you're held to, like I said, a specific code of professional responsibility. And you also have to pass background checks, which is standard with just about anything in the financial services industry today. Mm-hmm. The third is education. So you have to complete the executive education course at one of the SEMA registered education providers, such as Wharton in Philadelphia. There's also the Chicago School. And then I believe there's another program now that Yale offers.
Right, I think so.
Mm-hmm. So the fourth is examination. And when I took the exam, there was a preliminary qualification exam, which I think they've since done away with, but they still have the final certification exam. So once you complete that and they check out, you know, you check all the boxes and you're in the passing range when you receive your results, you are awarded the SEMA designation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to pass the executive education class before you can take the exam.
Correct.
Is how they're doing it.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so then you pass this exam as well, and then having met all those requirements. And I think that is a nice way to help remember it, that the four E's, the experience, the ethics, the education, and the exam. So, and you have continuing education, I assume, as well.
Yes, so 40 hours every 3 years.
Okay.
So they give you a pretty decent break, you know, in terms of spreading that out. But there is certainly some continuing education involved.
Okay, not to mention all the continuing education you get when you're working with your clients and having to do all of these, you know, other areas as well. So part of that curriculum, because I did some of my own homework on this, as part of that curriculum, you have to do a deep dive into five areas, as I understand it. Fundamentals, investments, portfolio theory and behavioral finance, which is one, risk and return, and portfolio construction. And there is so much involved, and we could talk about it for several shows. But tonight, I thought maybe we could kind of touch on a big picture on those areas that you studied for the SEMA before we take a deeper dive into the behavioral finance theory. Because I think in understanding some of these other areas, it helps kind of explain why we have to understand behavioral finance as well as part of, you know, understanding fundamentals and investments and risk and return and all of that. So what do you think? Let's talk about the fundamentals first.
Sure. So fundamentals, that's really the math or, you know, kind of the numbers behind investing and treating clients. Now, there's basic math, there's probabilities, statistics, distributions, hypothesis testing, confidence intervals, linear regression, analysis, and time series models, and amongst a number of others. Some of the terms that, you know, some of the listeners might be familiar with are compounding and probabilities, time value of money, discounting, yields, et cetera, and the list goes on. You know, fundamentals includes a lot of economic-based terms as well, such as monetary policy, which Bill, who was on the show recently, mm-hmm. he also just spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also some other terms like leading economic indicators, lagging economic indicators, the business or the market cycle, and a more familiar term, gross domestic product or GDP.
Okay, so yes, we have heard some of those terms, and of course we have not heard of some of those terms like linear regression. I mean, math majors might remember that from college, but most of us don't hear about that on a daily basis. But I do like that it encompasses some of those other terms that are very applicable that people probably talk about with their advisors, such as time value of money and discounting money and yields and types of things like that. Ryan, we're at our first break. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758 8810. That's 610-758-8810. We are talking with Ryan Mulhern, who is a CIMA certificate. That's a Certified Investment Management Analyst at Valley National. And we are going to continue our discussion talking about some of the curriculum that's involved in that certification before we move on to the behavioral finance, which I think is really going to be, you know, very interesting. Again, if you have questions, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1 and also available on the WDIY app. And podcasts of prior shows are also available at WDIY.org under Public Affairs. We are speaking with Ryan Mulhern this evening, Certified Investment Management Analyst at Valley National Financial Advisors. And Ryan, we're first kind of starting to talk about this designation and how comprehensive, in my opinion, it is. And, you know, that having that background, that education on some of these topics, that it's not just about, you know, having a dartboard where someone throws darts to pick their, you know, stocks and bonds. It's about understanding more than just that, which you had mentioned, the fundamentals covered so many different pieces. It's about making sure it's all kind of working together. One of the other components in that curriculum, we think Certified Investment Management Analyst, we think it's all just, you know, investments, but it is those fundamentals. It is portfolio theory, risk and return, portfolio construction. But can you kind of give me just a broad overview of these bigger topics before we get into the behavioral finance? And that would be investments. What are they kind of covering there?
So we could talk about investments probably for a week on end without taking a break. Obviously, there's plenty of different areas in which you can invest, theories and how to invest. Now, the CIMA program, it covers the principles of portfolio analysis and portfolio construction, kind of how you would analyze a client's, you know, what they have in terms of equities, fixed income, or alternative investments, and then kind of how to put together a portfolio that attaches to their risk tolerance level. And when it gets into more depth within each of those areas, so there's different levels of equity analysis, fixed income or bond analysis, and there's also less discussed asset classes, like I said, in alternative investments like options and futures, real estate, private investments, et cetera. There's kind of more to it, but those are the areas this program chose to focus on. Mm-hmm. I know there's things like the CFA or the Chartered Financial Analyst that will go into that this program does not. But I think this program does a good job of really working on the typical clients that, you know, advisors will work with in the retail world.
Mm-hmm. Good, good. And I suppose it's good to kind of have an understanding of all these different areas. You mentioned alternatives or real estate, because that might apply to some clients, maybe not to others, but it's good to have that understanding, because sometimes client situations evolve as well. They might start with a smaller portfolio, and over time working with them, their portfolio grows, and maybe they need a little bit more diversification. So it's good and important to kind of understand those different areas. I forgot to give the phone number again. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Eric's here. If you want to call in a question, we can talk live on air with you, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, give your question to Eric and he'll write it down and bring it into us. So as I said, we're going to talk about kind of portfolio theory or behavioral finance in a bit. So let's talk about one of the other areas in the curriculum, which is risk and return.
So we learn about returns across the various investable asset classes. as well as the attributes of risk and how risk can be measured. So, you know, there's all kinds of risk we can discuss. There's total risk, and then there's systematic risk and unsystematic risk, which basically assimilates to some risk you can control. You can try to, you know, diversify away within your portfolio, or unsystematic risk. And then there's systematic risk, or what the market will move and things you can't control. You know, what is kind of causing the market to move itself. You know, there's different terms that you're used to hearing, such as inflation or purchasing power risk. There's credit risk. There's liquidity risk, just to name a few. And there's a number of ways to attempt to measure these risks, and to assess them and try to, you know, spread them out in your portfolio so that one of these risks is not affecting you in such a negative way that's going to negatively affect the outcome for your client.
Mm-hmm. So you're balancing a number of things. So we've talked about the fundamentals. We've talked a little bit about the diversification in assets. And then you're talking about risk and return. So you're kind of trying to put all these things together when you're building a portfolio. And you mentioned terms that people probably aren't as familiar with, which was the unsystematic risk, which is what you said you can diversify away. And when we talk about diversify away, that's why diversification is so important. Right?
Correct.
So the diversification isn't just stocks and bonds. It's what kind of equities you might have, what kind of bonds you might have. Equities could be large cap, small cap, value, growth, all different kinds of details on that. And bonds could be corporate, high yield, government. Okay, so that's diversification. So that's unsystematic. And then you said systematic risk, which is something you really probably can't control. It's more driven by the market. Could that be a little bit about what we're seeing over the last couple of days? People are calling, oh my gosh, you know, I'm losing money. What should I do? Well, we're just talking. Did people call when the market was up and say, oh, what should I do? My account's so up. Because there's chatter out there right now, right? So what would you say what we're seeing now with systematic risk is just that chatter isn't necessarily what you've picked in your, not necessarily, so some of it could be, but it's not always necessarily what you picked. It just is the market forces.
Correct.
That are causing some of it.
Correct. So, you know, when you think about, you know, when you turn on the news, you hear what they're talking about on the news. That's what drives what we're going to talk about later in behavioral finance. So emotional investing. And that's what you see when you have these big market swings. A lot of time it is just news. You know, the Fed is going to raise rates in 6 months. Well, you know, we're predicting that. We've kind of seen the writing on the wall. So a lot of investors that aren't as savvy as some of the, you know, the big names out there, they're reactive to that type of news, whereas others have seen this coming, you know, along the way. Some of the more savvy investors that have the clients of their own, whereas the retail investors themselves, they're not seeing it coming. So they'll react and they'll be the ones calling saying, well, did you hear the news? Did you see what happened? What do we do? And in that moment, maybe we do react, but maybe we don't. It's not always necessary. When we put together the portfolio, we diversify for all different events. And that's part of what, you know, portfolio construction and diversification is about.
Right. And so some of those emotions are what makes buying opportunities for other people. I don't mean to laugh at that. I shouldn't, because we can't discount people's feelings. But that's part of the reason you kind of, as an advisor, try to understand someone's risk tolerance. Are they going to be panicked? And it's a lot of it is education as well, making sure that people understand that sometimes it is noise. But if you're diversified and you're in a proper risk tolerance, if you have a good emergency reserve, if you have, you know, the bucket for the 5 years, you don't always have to react when everybody else is reacting. I remember someone in the office once had a little picture, and it was the like a roller coaster almost, the up and down, and they were talking about the emotions, which is something that Ryan and I will talk about as we go through the show when we're looking at behavioral finance a little bit. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can call and talk live on air with us. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Eric. He will write it down and bring it in to us. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Did you know your phone is a radio? You can tune in to WDIY anywhere on the go with WDIY's phone app. Download for free from the Apple or Google store, and your phone will become your trusted radio. The easy-to-use app lets you listen to WDIY on your phone live and access your favorite music shows on demand. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to Many Choices, Real Voices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can also send questions through email at yourfinancialchoices.com. I have in the studio with me this evening Ryan Mulhern, who is a certified investment management analyst. We are talking about some of the curriculum and requirements behind that, and then we're going to talk about behavioral finance, which I hope will be a little bit fun for us. Let's kind of digress just for a moment, Ryan, because I thought it would be kind of important to kind of go back and talk to you about how going for this designation kind of evolved. So you graduated, you started working in the industry, and you decided to go for the CEMA. I'm not sure I was actually familiar with it before you joined the firm, but then I became very interested in it. And I think it's really a great designation, and you learn a lot. So do you want to kind of maybe tell us how you decided to go for that?
Sure. So I always knew education in anything you do is important. And when you start off in the financial services industry, you very quickly learn education is not only a way to set yourself apart from others, but it's also a way to improve your knowledge and your understanding and, you know, how you deal with clients, how you deal with investments in general. It's really just a way to get a leg up in, you know, all aspects of your career. So early on, you know, I got my foot in the financial services industry by taking the Series 65, 63, and the Series 7, which give you, you know, one gets you access to the investment advisory world as a representative, and the other gets you access to the broker-dealer side. So two separate sides of the industry, and that was kind of the way I got started. From there, you know, you can look into the various credentials out there, one being the CFP, or the Certified Financial Planner, another being the Chartered Financial Analyst, or the CFA. And neither one of those at this time in my career, not having working with clients directly, were a major help at that time. So I looked to the CEMA to be, you know, something to round off my skills as an investor, but also to start to build skills in terms of working with clients. So with that goal in mind of being an advisor and eventually wanting to work with clients, especially at a young age, and not having the experience working with clients and dealing with the markets directly with clients, you know, I knew I needed to get, you know, kind of an advantage over those, especially those who were older than me with experience. And the CEMA was the perfect fit. You know, I looked into it. It was described to me as the CFA super light, but with more of an advisory side to it. And so that's what kind of drove me in that direction. And lo and behold, I started my venture down that road on that journey. And, you know, 9 months later or so, I had the certification in my hand. And that was history, as they say.
It really was like a crash course. And it's very intensive. You did it through Wharton.
Yes, I did. Yeah. I did the Wharton Education Program.
Mm-hmm. It's very intense. So it really was. You really had foresight to realize how much that would help you, because I think it really puts you ahead of the game on understanding the depth of the investments, because it takes years sometimes to kind of get your arms around this. So congratulations on that. And I know you've had it for a while, but still, I think it's important to acknowledge it. So then we put all of this together for the client, and it includes, so we've talked about the fundamentals, we talked about risk and return, we've talked about, what else did we talk about, the investment side of it. So now we want to kind of work with the client, portfolio construction, there's some consulting process in that. Can you give us an overview on that?
Sure. All of what we talk about and what we're going to talk about later in terms of the behavioral finance, they all factor into portfolio construction. You know, you have to do your due diligence when prospecting your clients, when prospecting the funds that they're going to be invested in. But once you start working with them, you have to get to understand their needs, their wants, their goals, their time horizons, their risk tolerance, their objectives, and, you know, if there's any constraints in how they want to be invested. You know, some clients don't want to be invested in certain types of companies or a certain company for various reasons.
Mm-hmm. Like they don't want guns or gambling or alcohol or something.
Yes.
Or a constraint could be, I don't want to sell this position that I got from grandma and grandpa. That could be a constraint too.
Exactly.
Okay.
Some of them, they call those the sin stocks.
Okay.
You know, the alcohol, the gambling, that's one of the areas that some of the more socially conscious investors don't want to be putting their money in, per se.
Okay.
So from there, once you kind of get past the initial, you know, fact finding part of the client onboarding process, from there you start to develop an asset allocation for the client. So what you're looking for is, you know, let's find something that fits this client's risk tolerance and their goals and their timelines for reaching those goals. So over time, you put together you put them into the investments that make sense for their risk tolerance. And from there, you just monitor what you have them invested in, tweak as needed as you're going, and kind of just keep a conversation open with the client about the changes you're making, because market changes can happen quickly, and you don't want to be reactive. You want to be proactive.
Yeah, I love those terms.
That does not mean that you're not going to make changes that you didn't expect, because things can change on a dime. So a big part of that is having an investment philosophy. And a philosophy can be different between clients. With one particular client, you may be more of an aggressive approach. With another client, they're preservation minded. So your philosophy and how you handle those clients is going to be different. But you want to use that philosophy in guiding your decisions. There's always a core philosophy as who you are and how you approach investing that is important as well. And when you use that in kind of picking the fund managers that you choose to, you know, pick the stocks and the bonds and the other alternative investments that they choose to work with, that philosophy is going to attach to that as well. Because if their approach is something you don't agree with, you're not going to want to use them to manage the money that you're investing on your client's behalf.
Mm-hmm. And so part of that, interestingly, you said about time horizon, risk tolerance, objectives, constraints, that is part of or is going to be part of that behavioral finance that we're talking about, because understanding someone's tolerance for risk is or could be behavioral finance. It could be an emotion. So you kind of want to be in front of that. I've heard advisors sometimes say, can you sleep at night? Is it keeping you up at night? So that's kind of an emotional thing. So we will be talking about some of that as well. I think that you've talked about the fundamentals, which you kind of have to have a basic understanding of the investments and the economy, I guess, the broader issues. Then you've talked about understanding the investments and the different kinds, equities, bonds, some alternatives, whatever it might be. We've talked about risk and return, because that goes in hand with that. And then kind of putting it together. And I think the soft pieces of that, so that we can be very scientific about that, but the other part, which is what we're going to talk about in the second half of the show, is even with all that effort, we still have to sometimes manage our emotions. And it's not just the emotions of the advisor, because even advisors can have some emotions when they're watching the market. We have concerns about our clients. We are concerned for their reaction to the big volatility and the fluctuation. So even as advisors, we have to be careful of managing those emotions, but also making sure that we're kind of talk our clients through those emotions as well, if it's not going to benefit them. And we've seen it. We've seen it. There are people sell low when the market's down because they're panicked. They wait till they feel better when the market's back up and buy in. And what they're doing is selling low and buying high. But there's always another party to that that really benefits when those people are selling low, somebody else is buying low. And when those people who are panicked are selling, are buying in high, I'm selling high. So that's why it's important to understand the emotions behind that. That's what we're going to talk about when we come back from our break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY Allentown. The time is now 6:31. And your current temperature right now is 39 with clear skies. Lehigh Valley weather tonight is going to be low around 31 and a chance of rain later on tonight. Thursday is going to be snow mainly before 9 a.m. and partly sunny, high 32. Thursday night is going to be low 10 degrees. For your Friday, it's going to be mostly sunny, high 24, and Friday night, low 8 degrees. And on Saturday, it's going to be sunny, high 27, and Saturday night, low 13. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Seabird.
Welcome back to the show. This is Lori. Thank you, Shandi. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810, or you can email questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. I have with me this evening Ryan Mulhern, who is a certified investment management analyst. And we are talking about what goes into that designation, what that designation means. And now we're going to flip it on the other side and talk about some of the emotions around investing to see if we can learn a few things that might help us in, you know, acknowledging the emotions that we might have, being in front of them, and knowing how we need to, you know, react. If you have questions, again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You could talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, give your question to Eric. He'll write it down and bring it into us. So, Ryan, can you first talk about behavioral finance? What is that? I mean, I've said it a number of times tonight, but can you kind of give us a brief description, and then we can kind of talk about some of the areas of that.
So, yeah, behavioral finance, it's kind of a mental game. And there's a lot of terminology that is thrown around. And when you first hear terms, you may not, you know, fully understand what they mean. But, you know, there's some existing beliefs, biases, and assumptions, rules of thumb, if you must, that a lot of people use in how they approach their investments. Because, you know, news will come out or they'll read something, and that will affect a decision on how they want to approach their investments, for better or for worse. And many times it's just reactive, and it's natural for your brain to kind of lean that way. But that doesn't always mean it's what's best for your long-term results within your portfolio. And those existing beliefs, those cognitive biases, those rules of thumb, or, you know, just the different types of investors even, those affect, you know, how the results of how your portfolio is going to kind of shape out over time, especially if you're doing these things on a regular basis. That can have an even more dramatic effect on the portfolio as a whole. I think as advisors, you know, we're prone to these biases just as much as anyone who is just an average Joe who's just, you know, getting into investing today.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about one of those existing beliefs. So when we hear the term existing beliefs, there's one called conservatism, which is ignoring new information or clinging to old beliefs. I could see where some people could struggle with this. For example, when all of the technology, you know, advances, you know, 20 years ago, and now we have our new phones and we don't even think about it. We don't even realize what it was like 20 years ago. But some people might have thought, oh, how is that ever going to, you know, amount to anything? Maybe who could believe that we could do what we do with our phones? So how would you as an advisor kind of talk through someone who might say, if you're looking at a portfolio and you're trying to get some diversification, and you might say, let's have a little bit of some technology in our portfolio. And in fact, that's what's run up the markets as well. Right? We see the technology impact in the S&P because there's so much tech in the S&P. And that was just an example, but it could be something else. So how do you talk through someone on an existing belief, whether they're just trying to stick to, their own knowledge base to kind of broaden? Do you have kind of a...
Sure. Yeah. So I think a great way to talk about these terms is through examples.
Okay.
And I think one example of conservatism would be, let's say, if we flash back 20 years here, when Apple and Google are now Alphabet, and even Microsoft are really kind of growing their names and becoming the new technology frontier, if you must. And you look at a company like IBM or International Business Machines. So they were the old company that had been around for decades, and they had done well for so many of their investors. But Apple and Microsoft and Google were starting to kind of push ahead of them. Someone who is a conservative investor uses conservatism in how they approach their investments, they might say, IBM's been doing this for decades. They've done so well for me. Why would I switch to a company like Apple? It's not really it's not in every household out there. Well, if you flash forward 20 years and you look at where Apple's at today and where Microsoft's at today, where Google's at today, they're the dominant tech companies. And so someone who clings to that old thought process might not think to invest in those companies in the early days, but that's when those companies became such prominent names and really started their march to where they are today as multi-trillion-dollar companies. So that's something that's going to affect your approach in trying something new and investing in a new company.
Mm-hmm. That was a good example. And in fact, if you think about that and go back to your example earlier that we were talking about, how putting this all together, you were talking about portfolio construction and diversification. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're saying, IBM or Apple. It could be tech is doing well. We're seeing advances in a number of companies. It could be diversifying across a number of companies, not just one company. And that's been really important. We have seen that over time, that AT&T isn't what AT&T used to be, or GE isn't what GE used to be. So I think that when we talk about, honing in on just one company, it might be important to also mention it's not just conservatism where you're kind of sticking with ignoring new information, but kind of being open to more things. We have Daniel from Nazareth, and I don't know if Daniel's on the air or if... Okay, Daniel called in with a question. He was interested in knowing Ryan's feelings on Capital Group American Funds. He has 9 funds. Now, we can't talk about specific investments on the show because we're educational, but we do know that Capital Group of American Funds has been around a long time and has a good reputation. So because we can't talk about specific investments, Ryan, to answer Daniel's question, is there a way that Daniel could kind of understand what to look for when he's investing to feel if it's comfortable for him? That might be a better way to answer this question.
Sure. So, American Funds or Capital Group, they're a prominent firm. They're very well diversified. They have a number of equity funds, fixed income funds available to investors. And one of the areas we studied in our SEMA is called style investing. And when you look at the styles of how American Funds or Capital Group's funds invest, you can compare that to other funds out there. And, it may be difficult to find apples to apples, funds that hold exactly what, the American funds hold, or, similar styles in how they invest. But you can at least get a grasp on how, their investing styles and how their managers approach investing and compare them to one another. So obviously with such a prominent company like American Funds, it's well diversified across the board. They have a big fund family. So one thing you know is that they have a large team. They have a lot of analysts. They have a lot of, you know, feet on the ground to kind of do their research for them. And it really shows in, you know, their funds and what they do and how well they've developed their platform and the number of, you know, really types of accounts that you're able to have these funds in now. It's not just your brokerage account or your IRA. You're also able to have them in your retirement plans. And they've done a great job at really accessing that market. And that's why they've had such success. And really, you know, spreading out their company to a wider universe of investors.
Thanks, Ryan. I think that's great. And Daniel, I hope that helped answer your question. And I agree, they have a deep bench of research analysts. And to your point about the SEMA designation, you said it's super light. I wouldn't really call it super light, but maybe a light version of the chartered financial analyst. Typically, that's probably where you see those people, where they're working for fund companies, doing that deep, deep research into the actual companies. I know that sometimes it means their analysts are, you know, going all over the world to actually be feet on the ground to meet the companies and company heads and seeing how they're running. So that really would apply to any kind of investments that someone's doing, that they could look at the returns and the underlying cost. And, you know, quite often I'll have people say, oh, but that fund costs so much more. Well, the fund costs are paying for that research sometimes, and the returns, you know, after those costs are sometimes better than a fund that might have very low cost. So I think it's really important when people are trying to see how their particular funds are doing, that they're using, there are a number of things to look at. So the style, as you mentioned, but also the returns and things like that. So thanks. And thank you, Daniel, for calling in with that question. Going back to a little bit of this behavioral finance, and I liked the example you gave, let's talk about some biases. So there's one that we see sometimes or hear about, hindsight bias, where they say, I knew it all along, and they reconstruct the nature of their memory. It prevents them from learning from mistakes as well. And I'm going to give you an example. Let's say someone invested in something, and they said, you know, oh, it's really going to take off. This is really great. And it just happens that it does do great, but they think they did, you know, and it was great. Or opposite, they say, I should get out of that. I'm going to get out of that. And then that particular stock or fund tanks, and they think they were smart and say, yes, I knew it all along. So hindsight bias, I hear this sometimes. People will come in and say, you know, oh, I did this all on my own. I did great. These are my returns. But they seem to forget about the losses that they might have had. So hindsight bias, we're kind of only, if I'm understanding this right, you're kind of confirming something for yourself looking back. I don't know. Does that...
I think it's just the tendency of investors to cling on to the positive outcomes and mentally just... you know, dispose of the ones that they weren't so positive. And I think that's natural in how our brains tend to work. Many people try to focus on the positives and not the negatives. Others are the exact opposite. They would not be, you know, this is not an attribute that they have. But many investors do, especially the ones that are, they put a lot of merit in their own thought processes and what they do. And their reasoning for why something or why a company might go up or go down might be accurate, but it might not be. But whatever the fund or the company does, they might attribute it to how they think. And they think, well, I knew that. Whereas it wasn't their thought process that did that. It's just what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And like I've always said, the market is a kind of an area of buyers and sellers. And so it's any given group of investors' thoughts and how much they want to buy or how much they want to sell something that's going to affect the price. So some investors will cling to those positive moments and then just not really remember the negative ones that could have even hurt them even worse than they actually helped with some of those positive moments. So mm-hmm. It's certainly a bias. It's a part of the way someone thinks.
Mm-hmm. So we're at our last break, Ryan. The show's going very quickly. If people have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Maybe when we come back, we can kind of touch on maybe a couple more of those biases and then some of those rules of thumb. So the biases are really kind of information processing And the rules of thumb are kind of more emotionally driven. You hear about rules of thumb. Oh, I could take 4% out of my portfolio and you know, I should be good. Well, that's a rule of thumb that may or may not work with your particular portfolio. So, folks, if you have questions, we still have a bit of time. 610-758-8810. And we'll be back with Ryan Mulhern, Certified Investment Management Analyst, in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Good evening. Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. You can listen to podcasts of prior shows at WDIY.org. Also available on any number of other streaming services, including NPR.org and YourFinancialChoices.com. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with us or off air if you're not comfortable talking live. You can also send questions through the website at YourFinancialChoices.com. And show ideas, too. I got a show idea from someone from North Carolina a couple days ago, and it's great. And I'm going to do a show on what she suggested very soon. As soon as I book my guests, we're going to talk about business entity types. But this evening, I have with me Ryan Mulhern, Certified Investment Management Analyst at Valley National Financial Advisors. And we are talking about the CEMA designation and some behavioral finance issues to help you kind of be aware. I think, Ryan, it really is important to kind of just be aware of these things, and then that helps us kind of know how we should react. I think that was really good. So are there other biases that you want to kind of point out to us or tell us a little story? We can do some rules of thumb and then maybe talk about some investor types with the time we have left.
Yeah, so there's a number of rules of thumb, you know, that advisors and other investors speak about. You know, there's things like sell in May and go away, or the rule of 72 in terms of, you know, with interest rates, how much return you can expect over the years ahead of you based on that rule of 72. And we talked about, you know, the self-attribution, which kind of leads into overconfidence as an investor. Some investors think that they really know it all. And that everyone else is wrong and they're the only one that can be right. So we kind of touched on that, but I would like to get into something that's called affinity. It's your likeness to your country, to your style, to your image. So someone who is, you know, a big fan of Nike might want to buy Nike stock.
Oh my
or
gosh,
Adidas,
yes.
They want to buy Adidas stock.
I bought Coke. Yeah. Coca-Cola.
So there's that affinity to your country. Now, let's say you're from India, so you think, you know, I'm from India, I want to buy an Indian ETF. That might be a good purchase at this time. It might not, but that's something that sits home with you, and that's going to affect how you're approaching your investments. You might put too much weight into that particular investment, whereas someone who's not from India might not even think that that's even something they would ever consider investing in.
Yeah.
So that's just one example of affinity there, and I think the Nike example is the one that people think, oh, I truly understand that because, you know, I wear Nike everywhere. So
right.
Of course I want to hold Nike stock or Under Armour stock.
Yeah, or Apple. That's what,
or Apple, the one that we all hold in our hands for too many hours of the day. you know, that's one example there.
But having that affinity could throw us off from making rational decisions about that stock is kind of, I think, where you're going with that.
Exactly.
Right?
And that's what brings the emotional side of it. And you're using your personal feelings to affect how you're investing. And they always say the best investors are the ones who don't let their emotions affect their approach to investing. They let their approach and their their research and their analysis kind of drive how they approach investing. And that typically leads to a better result. You know, I'm sure there's the one-off cases where it doesn't. But that has been more successful in the history of how people have approached investing.
I'm going to throw a question at you because, you know, we hear about Warren Buffett and he says, buy what you know. So someone might think, well, Warren Buffett said, buy what you know. And I know Nike or I know Coca-Cola or whatever. But that's not exactly what he's doing, is it? He is doing research behind buying what you know. He's not just buying it because he likes to go to McDonald's or drink a Coke. He has done the research behind that. So I don't want people to get, you know, when we talk about affinity or whatever as an example, you still have to do a little work behind it, right?
Exactly. And you think of Warren Buffett when, you know, he was a large investor in Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo went through, you know, a bit of a crisis in their own company,
right,
in terms of the products they were selling to people, how they were selling to people. And what it was doing to those clients. You know, they were causing issues, you know, outside of what a bank should do to their clients. And that took a hit on the stock price. So many people probably use Wells Fargo as their checking account or their savings account. So, you know, Wells Fargo, and it was a great buy at one point, but for a while it struggled, and since then it's rebounded. But you know, there's times where you need to do your research beyond just knowing the company, because there could be a fundamental issue than just the name or the brand that you aren't aware of, some sort of crisis within that you might not understand or see coming had you not done your research.
Right. Any other rules of thumb or biases that we should touch on? And we have, you know, several minutes left. I also want to talk about investor types.
Sure.
But I love the stories. I think that helps you understand. So if someone calls, and I've had this happen, oh, my portfolio dropped since yesterday. You know, $1.5 million portfolio. I'm making this up. $1.5 million portfolio. I lost money since yesterday. I lost $20,000. Someone calls to tell you that they invested originally. And I'm going to make this up to $1 million. But today they said I lost $20,000 since yesterday. Is that emotions?
It could be emotional. It could be fundamentally driven. You have to kind of dig into, why is that person thinking that? What is driving that kind of rationale? Are they listening to something they're seeing on TV, or do they truly have some assessment that they've done that tells them, you know, something's not right here, and maybe we should change our approach to the investments right now?
Yeah. So don't lose sight of the whole overall picture. Understand that markets do fluctuate; that they go up and down. And I do think that there is a lot of news that has driven some of the concern that investors have had, and understanding, you know, I love that the TV's in the office. I go, oh my gosh, breaking news. There's breaking news every day. Oh, golly, breaking news. It cracks me up. Let's talk about investor types, because this also kind of plays into a little bit of the behavioral finance, I would say. And I think, again, we're not discounting people's feelings. What we're trying to say is you have to understand behavior to properly, you know, do portfolio construction so that you can tolerate, you know, the volatility or the risk or the particulars to your situation. You may be someone who needs, a tilt toward fixed income because you're going to buy a house or, you know, put kids through college or whatever it might be. So these investor types are important to understand as well, because that does play into the emotion. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure. I think, you know, the first one you think of are those notorious preservers. They don't want to take on any risk. They think and they have what's called loss aversion. They're more worried about losing money than they are about gaining money. They basically have, double the aversion to risk or losing money as they do to gain. Like, they would rather lose no money and gain, you know, a dollar than lose $2 and potentially gain $10.
Okay.
You know, that's just a small example of that. So that's kind of their, you know, how they approach things. And as their advisor, you want to look at them and what is their situation? What are their needs? What are their timelines? Is being a preservative investor, is that is that the best for you? And it may or may not be, but you have to kind of find some middle ground between what they, how they feel about investing and how you feel that they should be invested based on the goals and all the research that you've done and all the collaboration that you've had with that client.
And the experience as well, because over time you develop experience to know, like, are these numbers going to work? Is this person really preservation minded? Should they be, or is there some other fear or emotion behind that?
Exactly. Yeah. So, okay. So, you know, you've worked with this client and, you know, they may be a savvy investor or they may not be, and how they approach investments. And that's why when I, you know, personally, when I ask someone about, you know, what is, you know, when I fill out a questionnaire and they say, they go through all the questions and they answer all of them. One of the questions is, how much experience do you have? Because that experience is going to tell me, you know, this might be rational thinking. It also might not be. So I may want to dig further on that, knowing their level of experience, because there's usually a story to why they're feeling the way they are. And it could be well-founded, or it could be something they just heard and from someone who may not know any more than they do about the situation. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to always be digging and try to figure out what is driving that person's thought process. And how can we either talk them off the ledge, or maybe that decision is a good decision and maybe we should go with that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of finding a way to get through those conversations with the client so that can be the best result for both parties and for the portfolio as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What other kind of investor types?
So there's followers. Followers are going to turn on CNBC and they're going to see a prominent investor like Warren Buffett on there. Mm-hmm. And they're going to say, well, Warren's buying this industry right now. I'm going to follow him.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to what he says, and that understand what you're investing in. He might understand semiconductors or the various, you know, components of the electronic devices out there. But do you know where it's going? You know, what is Warren Buffett's timeline? Mm-hmm. What is your timeline? Mm-hmm. How do those two things coincide? Does this make sense for you, or is it just making sense for him?
Mm-hmm.
There's always more to it than just the, you know, the face value of those types of approaches and investing.
Right, and Warren Buffett will react sooner than you might, because he's not like whispering in your ear. What else do we have?
So there's accumulators, and those are the people that they're looking to grow their portfolio as much as they can. They're very high risk. They're very entrepreneurial. They've probably done well for themselves. And they have a comfortable state because they're not drawing on their portfolio. They don't need to worry about this expense or that expense. So they're just trying to grow what they have and, you know, build the biggest retirement portfolio or just, you know, bucket of wealth that they can. Mm-hmm. So they're going to approach things very aggressively, and that might be okay in some instances, and it may not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something where you have to, you know, kind of coincide with what the investor feels and how they approach things, what the market environment tells you, and how to structure that portfolio, again, based upon that investor type.
Mm-hmm. And we've got like another minute. Any other types? And there's, I'm sure we could even talk about more, but give me another one if you've got time.
So then there's the independent investor. The independent investor may just go with the wind. They may have an approach that is called contrarian. Contrarian investor is someone who goes against what the crowd is doing, for better or for worse. You know, if the market's kind of dropping down, they may be the type to start buying, which can be to your benefit. It also cannot be for your benefit. Let's say the market's going up and you're selling, but the market might continue to go up significantly, as we've seen over the last number of years, and that would not be to your benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a different, it's more independent, kind of an open term. And basically their approach to investing is, I'm going to, you know, do my own analysis on things and kind of handle things as I feel right, given what I feel and what's happening in the markets, what my assessment is.
Ryan, it has been great talking with you tonight, and I hope that this is just the first time of many visits with us, because I think that this was a great overview tonight, and I think that, you know, on a future show, we could probably dig deeper into some of these areas. And I, you know, we're not psychologists, but we certainly do work with people's emotions, you know, on a daily basis. But I really think it's important for folks to understand that your Certified Investment Management Analyst designation really kind of prepares you not only for the portfolio construction, understanding the fundamentals of the markets and the economy, risk and return, but it kind of also the emotions. So thank you so much for taking your time tonight to kind of bring us up to speed on that designation. I think that's important. If people would like to reach you, what is your phone number?
So my office number is 610-868-9000, extension 128.
Okay, and people can find more information about you at valleynationalgroup.com.
Correct, yes.
Okay, Ryan, thanks so much for being here. Eric, thank you for being here. Shandi, thank you for being here as well. Next week, we are going to talk about getting ready for tax season. That sounds like something for preparers, but I actually want to get you, the listeners, individuals, ready for tax season and how you can make that process more efficient and beneficial for yourself and taking advantage of understanding tax planning as well. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.